a man that is of Copernicus's opinion that this Earth of ours is a planet, carried round and enlightened by the sun, like the rest of them, cannot but sometimes have a fancy that it's not improbable that the rest of the planets have their dress and furniture, nay, and their inhabitants too, as well as this Earth of ours. Especially if he considers the later discoveries made since Copernicus's time of the attendance of Jupiter and Saturn, and the hilly countries in the moon, which are an argument of a relation and kin between our Earth and them. First, 'tis more than probable that the bodies of the planets are solid, like that of our Earth, and that they don't want what we call gravity, that virtue which, like a lodestone, attracts whatever is near the body to its centre. And that they have such a quality, their very figure is a proof, for their roundness proceeds only from an equal pressure of all their parts tending to the same centre. Nay, more, we are so skillful nowadays as to be able to tell how much more or less the gravitation in Jupiter or Saturn is than here. But now, to carry the search further, let us see by what steps we must rise to the attaining some knowledge in the more private secrets concerning the state and furniture of these new Earths. And first, how likely is it that they may be stocked with plants and animals, as well as we? How should we allow the planets nothing but vast deserts, lifeless and inanimate stocks and stones, and deprive them of all those creatures that more plainly speak of their divine architect? We should sink them below the earth in beauty and dignity, a thing that no reason will permit, as I said before. Well then, now that we have gained the point for them, and the planets may be allowed some bodies, capable of moving themselves, and these are animals. Now, for fear of starving these poor creatures, we must have plants, you know. And as for their growth and nourishment, 'tis no doubt the same as ours, seeing they have the same sun to warm and enliven them, as ours have. But perhaps somebody may say, we conclude too fast. Why must they be of the same nature with ours? Nature seems to court variety in her works, and may have made them widely different from ours, either in their manner or matter of growth, in their outward shape or their inward contexture. She may have made them such as neither our understanding nor imagination can conceive. Who doubts but the God, if he had pleased, might have made the animals in America and other distant countries nothing like ours? And nature, you know, affects variety, yet we see he has not done it. They have indeed some difference in their shape, and 'tis fit they should, to distinguish the plants and animals of those countries from ours who live on this side of the earth. But even in this variety there is an agreement, an exact correspondence in figure and shape, the same ways of growth and new productions, and of continuing their own kind. Their animals have feet and wings like ours, and like ours have heart, lungs, guts, and the parts serving to generation. Whereas all these things, as well with them as us, might, if it had pleased infinite wisdom, have been ordered in a very different way. 'Tis more probable that all the difference there is between us and them springs from the greater or less distance and influence from that fountain of heat and life, the sun, which will cause a difference not so much in their form and shape as in their matter and contexture. Thus we see that by the means of water the plants grow, blossom, and bear fruit, and by the addition of that only. That the planets are not without water is made not improbable by the late observations, for about Jupiter are observed some spots of a darker hue than the rest of his body, which by their continual change show themselves to be clouds. For the spots of Jupiter which belong to him and never remove from him are quite different from these, being sometimes for a long time not to be seen for these clouds. That they have plants and animals I think I have fully proved, and by the same argument of their not being inferior to our Earth, they must have as great a variety of both as we have. What this is will be best known to him that considers the different ways our animals make use of in moving from one place to another. Which may be reduced, I think, to these. Either that they walk upon 2 feet, or 4, or like insects upon six, nay sometimes hundreds, or that they fly in the air bearing up and wonderfully steer themselves with their wings, or creep upon the ground without feet or by a violent spring in their bodies, or, paddling with their feet, cut themselves away in the waters. I don't believe, nor can I conceive, that there should be any other way than those mentioned. The animals, then, in the planets, must make use of one or more of these, like our amphibious birds, which can swim in water, as well as walk on land, or fly in the air, or like our crocodiles and seahorses, must be mongrels between land and water. There can, no other method, be imagined but one of these. But when we come to meddle with the shape of these creatures, and consider the incredible variety that is even in those of the different parts of this earth, and that America has some which are nowhere else to be found, I must then confess that I think it beyond the force of imagination to arrive at any knowledge in the matter, or reach probability concerning the figures of these planetary animals. But perhaps it may be asked as well concerning brutes as rational creatures, whether they are proportionally larger or less than ours. For if the magnitude of the planets was to be the standard of their measure, there would be animals in Jupiter 10 or 15 times larger than elephants, and as much longer than our whales, and then their men must be Goliaths in respect of our pygmy ships. Now, though I don't see any so great absurdity in this as to make it impossible, yet there is no reason to think it is really so, seeing nature has not always tied herself to these rules, which we have thought more convenient for her. For example, the magnitude of the planets is not answerable to their distances from the Sun, but Mars, though more remote, is far less than Venus, and Jupiter turns round his axis in 10 hours when the Earth, which is much less than him, spends 24. But since nature, perhaps somebody will say, has not observed such a regularity in the proportion of things, for aught we know, we may have a race of pygmies, about the bigness of frogs and mice, possessed of the planets. Then, the necessity in such observations of marking down the epochs or accounts of time, and of transmitting them to posterity, will force us to grant them the art of writing. I won't say the same with ours, which is commonly used, but I dare affirm not more ingenious or easy. For how much more ready and expeditious is our way than by that multitude of characters used in China, and how vastly preferable to knots tied in cords, or the pictures in use among the barbarous people of Mexico and Peru. There's no nation in the world but has some way or other of writing and marking down their thoughts. So that it's no wonder, if the planetarians had been taught it by that great schoolmistress necessity, and apply it to the study of astronomy and other sciences. But somebody might perhaps object, and not without reason, that the planetarians are just as likely to be destitute of all refined knowledge, just as the Americans were before they had commerce with the Europeans. For if one considers the ignorance of those nations and of others in Asia and Africa equally barbarous, it will appear as if the main design of the Creator in placing men upon the earth was that they might live, and, in a just sense of all the blessings and pleasure they enjoy, worship the fountain of their happiness, but that some bold fellows have leapt over the bounds of nature and made searches into those forbidden depths only out of an affectation of knowing more than they were made for. We have shown before the necessary dependence and connection, not only of geometry and arithmetic, but of mechanical arts and instruments with this science. This leads us naturally to the inquiry how they can use these instruments and engines for the observation of the stars, how they can write down such their observations, and perform other things which we do with our hands. I know an ancient philosopher laid such stress upon the use and conveniency of the hands that he made no scruple to affirm they were the cause and foundation of all our knowledge. By which, I suppose, he meant no more than that without their help and assistance men could never arrive to the improvement of their minds in natural knowledge. And truly, not without reason. For suppose instead of them they had hooves, like horses or bullocks given them, they might have laid indeed the model and design of them in their head, but they would never have been able to build cities and houses. They would have been void of all knowledge and memory, and indeed would have been but 1 degree distant from brute beasts. What could we imagine or invent that could be so exactly accommodated to all the designed uses as hands are? Shall we give them an elephant's proboscis? 'Tis true, these beasts can lay hold of or throw anything, can take up even the smallest things from the ground, and can perform such admirable feats with it, that it has not very improperly been called their hand, though indeed it is nothing but a nose somewhat longer than ordinary. Nor do birds show less art and design in the use of their bills for the picking up of meat, and the wonderful composure of their nests. But all this is nothing to those conveniences the hand is so admirably suited to. Nothing to that amazing contrivance in its capacity of being stretched or contracted or turned to any part as occasion shall require. And then, to pass by that nice sense that the ends of the fingers are endued with, even to the feeling and distinguishing most sorts of bodies in the dark, what wisdom and art is showed in the disposition of the thumb and fingers, so as to take up or keep fast hold of anything we please. Either then the gentlemen that live there must have hands, or something equally convenient, which is no easy matter, or else we must say that nature has been kinder not only to us, but even to squirrels and monkeys than them. That they have feet, scarce anyone can doubt, that does but consider what we said just now of the different methods of progression, which it's hard to imagine can be performed in any other way than those we have recounted. Except, what is not very probable if they live in a society as I shall show they do, they have found out the art of flying in some of these worlds. Astronomy, as we said before, could never subsist without the writing down of observations, nor could the art of writing, any more than the carpenters and founders, ever be found out except in a society of reasonable creatures, where the necessities of life forced upon them invention. So that what I promise to prove follows from hence, namely that the planetarians must in this be like us, that they maintain a society and fellowship with, and afford mutual assistances and helps to one another. Hereupon we must allow them a settled, not a wandering Scythian way of living. But what then? Shall they have everything else proper for such a manner of living granted them too? Shall they have their governors, houses, cities, trade and bartering? Why not? When even the barbarous people of America and other places were at their first discovery found to have somewhat of that nature in use among them. I won't say that things must be the same there as they are here. We have many that may very well be spared among rational creatures and were designed only for the preservation of society from all injury, and for the curbing of those men who make an ill use of their reason to the detriment of others. Perhaps in the planets they have such plenty and affluence of all good things as they neither need nor desire to steal from one another. Perhaps they may be so just and good as to be a perpetual peace and never to lie in wait for or take away the life of their neighbour. Perhaps they may not know what anger or hatred are, which we too at our cost and misery know here too well. But still, it's more likely that they have such a medley as we, such a mixture of good with bad, of wise with fools, of war with peace, and want not that schoolmistress of arts, poverty. Thus I have heaped together all these late discoveries of our earth, and now, though perhaps some of them may be common to the planetarians with us, yet that they should have all of them is not credible. 'Tis a very ridiculous opinion that the common people have got among them that it is impossible a rational soul should dwell in any other shape than ours. And yet, as silly as 'tis, it has been the occasion of many philosophers allowing the gods no other shape. This can proceed from nothing but weakness, ignorance, and prejudice of man, as well as that, too, of humane figure being the handsomest and most excellent of all others, when indeed it's nothing but a being accustomed to that figure that makes us think so, and a conceit that we and all other animals naturally have, that no shape or colour can be so good as our own.